Blog Talk Radio.
Hello from my heart, everybody. That was Dreamweaver by Gary Wright. And tonight we have a very special lady here. Her name is Linda Yale Schiller, and she is the author of PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dreamwork. And this is such an amazing book. I've been reading it quite a bit, and it says here on the back, nightmares, especially those caused by trauma, disrupt your sleep, leaving you exhausted and on the edge. But when you understand the nature of heart-pounding dreams, you can safely heal them and their root causes. Psychotherapist Linda Yale Schiller shows you how to turn post-traumatic dreams into spiritual growth with the Guided Active Imagination Approach, also known as GAIA, a method she based on best practice trauma treatment and Jungian active imagination principles. Through compelling case descriptions and thoughtful exercises, you will learn how to apply integrated and embodied dreamwork techniques, as well as somatic, narrative, and psycho-spiritual approaches. Combining neuroscience, physicism, and creativity, PTS Dreams helps you transform nightmares into a new story, one of hope, healing, and life-affirming images. And, you know, like I mentioned before, Linda Yale Schiller, she is a mind, body, and spiritual psychotherapist, consultant, and international teacher with four decades of experience in both dream work and trauma treatment. She has designed several innovative methods for dream work and is trained in EMDT, EFT, energy psychology, and other therapies. And check out her website. It's very informative. It's lindayaleschiller.com. So without further ado, I'm going to bring my lovely guest on. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you here tonight. As someone who suffers from PTSD, well, suffers less from PTSD, I should say, now, and my husband, who has PTSD, this you know, this book has brought me a lot of insight. And I have to ask, why is his book on nightmares and trauma particularly relevant in these times?
That's a really good question.
So I think maybe, you know, with all the TV, even radio too, a lot of fear is out there right now, you know, with Russia, North Korea, Iran, everybody, you know, out there, you know, everybody's worried about a war, you know, a potential war happening. Well, of course, there's a war in Ukraine, you know, just brings a lot of bad images to mind. And I know one thing my father used to tell me, when even when I was a kid, he's like, don't watch the news, especially at night. And that's
being
so true.
And to care about one another is so important. So in these times, people struggle both with personal trauma in their own lives, in their own families, as well as being tuned into things happening all over the world.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And how would we know if a nightmare might be caused by trauma or something else?
So there are I break it into three types of dreams. There are sort of regular dreams or good dreams. There are what we might call a bad dream. And then there are nightmares that are from trauma sources. And the way to tell the difference really has to do with what's called the emotional narrative in the dream. So in our dreams, when we have a dream at night, there's a plot line, there's a story, there's images, there's characters, there's a landscape, there's all those aspects of a dream story. And in addition, there are the emotions that we're feeling inside of the dream and then after we wake up from the dream. And the emotions are our clue as to what kind of a dream we're having. So if we wake and we're feeling, or in the dream itself, if we're feeling delighted or excited or happy or pleased, then it's a regular, nice, good dream. If we're feeling a little bit anxious or a little bit on edge or a little bit fearful, maybe it's a bad dream, but it's not renting space in our head all day long. It's not lingering and disrupting our waking hours, and we're not waking with terror. The nightmares from which we wake with dread, with terror, with fear, and those that wake us from our sleep where we can't, like we're gasping for breath or we can't, our heart is pounding as if we've been chased, those more often has to do with some kind of traumatic event. And then in particular, when these nightmares are not just sort of a one-off, like once in a blue moon, but when either the nightmare itself or the theme of the story is repetitive, that is a sure sign that we're probably pointing in the direction of some kinds of trauma being at the source.
Yes. Yeah. And I can certainly relate to that. Absolutely. I have to ask, I know what trauma and PTSD is for everybody, well, for myself and my husband, but for those out there listening, what is trauma and what is PTSD and who gets PTSD and who doesn't, and how are intrusive and ongoing nightmares a symptom of this?
So PTSD, the letters stand for post-traumatic stress disorder. So for something to become a disorder, to get the D on the end, means that it has to persist for longer than 6 months as a general rule for it to be classified as a disorder, something that is continuing and persisting. So we all have what we'd call big T or small T possible traumas in our lives. I mean, we probably can't live in the world without having small T traumas, the little things that annoy us or irritate us or scare us or upset us, but we get over them pretty quickly and they're not repetitive, they're not ongoing, and they're not life-threatening. The difference between those and the big T traumas are ones that either are or feel like they are life-threatening, that we've experienced personally or have witnessed from our surroundings or other people that we live with. And there are many different responses to ongoing trauma. It can be acute trauma, like a one time you were in a tornado or a hurricane, and that was very traumatic, and so the events of surrounding that natural disaster might linger for a while. And then there's chronic trauma, which is something that goes on and on and on. People who grow up in abusive or neglectful households, people who live with substance abuse in their families, kids who are chronically bullied at school, these are ongoing sorts of trauma. And there's the trauma is what happens to us. How we respond and our reaction to the trauma is what determines whether or not we develop PTSD. And how other people in our life respond to knowledge of us having experienced the trauma has a lot to do with whether and how fast we heal. So the surroundings, the environment, whether or not people get care, attention, believed in healing quickly or not so quickly or not at all, really makes the difference between whether we develop a disorder or we don't.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely relate to that too. Absolutely. And I have to ask, what is dissociation in relationship to reactions to trauma, and how might that show up in our dream life? Got to be the subconscious.
Right. So dissociation is a brilliant coping strategy that our minds develop in order to protect us. And what it does is allows us to have some distance from what's happening to us so that we sort of separate time and space from where we are in the moment to where our minds take us. And it allows us, if we can't escape in our physical bodies, to escape in our minds and to go somewhere else so that we're not needing to be fully present for the harmful or difficult things that are happening. And as a temporary measure, this is a wonderful strategy, and it helps us to sometimes simply stay alive, to survive, to not feel a certain pain that we otherwise would be completely undone by in order to get to a safe place. If these strategies, however, persist and become part of our personality style, we respond to things that remind us of the trauma with a dissociative response that is no longer appropriate and no longer helpful. So if you're had a trauma, for example, if one of the listeners had a trauma that involved growing up, this is an example of a client of mine. She grew up in an alcoholic family system, and her father was pretty violent and abusive. And later, when she was a young adult, she was dating a boyfriend, and when they kissed one time, ordinarily she liked kissing him, but one time he had been drinking beer, and after they kissed, she had this reaction of like leaving her body and freezing and being terrified, and she had no idea why. And later on, through our work together, she realized that it was the smell of the beer on his breath that triggered her, because it was that type of a substance. It was beer that her father drank when he would lose control and be violent. And so
wow.
She reacted as if he was in danger, even though she wasn't in the present tense, right? And so these kinds of losing time and space is what happens in our dream life as well. Almost by definition, if something is coming to us in a nightmare, we are remembering something in our dreaming self that has been suppressed or repressed or buried, that we've gotten some distance from in our waking life in order to cope and to keep on going. But our dreaming self is bringing it back forward now to say, okay, it's time to take a look at this. Maybe you're in a safe enough space now to begin to remember, to deal with this, to work with it, and bring the memories back together. So we need to have what's called memory reconsolidation, which is one of the tasks of our dreams. So ironically, if someone begins to have nightmares, even though it's very uncomfortable and not at all something someone would look forward to. Ironically, it can actually be a sign that our system is moving in the direction of memory reconsolidation and the beginning of healing of whatever the trauma source was of the nightmares.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I have to ask also, what is the main difference between a dream, a bad dream, and nightmare?
Well, I sort of mentioned that. I think it's really what are the emotions that are connected with it. So
right.
If you have a pleasant emotion, it's a dream. And if you have a terrifying emotion from whatever the story was, then it's a nightmare.
Right, that's right. You did mention that before, yes. And how do we know if we've worked through a nightmare?
So the short answer is if it no longer creates upset for us, when something difficult has happened in our waking life or in our dreaming life and we are responding emotionally with high upset, so like when you go to the doctor's office and they say, how big is your pain, rated on a scale of 1 to 10? If we're rating the upset from our nightmare at a 7, a 9, a 10, we haven't resolved it yet. But if we can put our attention on that same image that we had before and our upset is really a 1 or even a 0, then we've resolved it. The other answer to the question is when we're no longer having the nightmare.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yep. And also, why is it important to approach working with nightmares slowly and carefully using a method such as Gaia method, the guided active imagination approach? And what are the elements of this approach? And I'm just curious about that.
Sure. So when we're working either with ourselves or with someone else or in a group or in a therapeutic setting with really scary dreams, we don't want to run the risk of re-traumatizing either ourselves or the person or people who we're working with. So we want to create an environment of safety and connection that's different from both what was there in the nightmare and most likely what was there during the original source of the trauma itself. So because of this need not to make matters worse, that's always our first order of business, is do no harm. We want to make sure that our dreamer feels safe and resourced and secure enough to be able to look at these really scary and terrifying images that came through to them in the night without feeling re-terrified by the images in the dream. So as you mentioned when you read from the jacket of the book, I developed this method based on two principles. And one is best practice trauma treatment. And some of the work with Gaia is derivative of EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a integrated body-mind trauma therapy. And the first part of that and the first part of Gaia is creating resources. So step one of the method is to work with the dreamer before you even go near the nightmare itself to say, what resources, what do you need to feel safe, comfortable, secure, and willing and able to take a look at what happened in the dream without feeling re-traumatized by it? So we ask the people to bring into the room with them people who are safe people in their life, whether they're alive or have passed over, pets that they have, spiritual beings, characters from books or movies or TV shows. One of my clients brought Gandalf from The Lord of the Rings in as his safe person, and one of the children I worked with once said that she was going to bring Mary Poppins with her to be her safe protector before working on the dream. And then we ask, what kind of objects would you like to have with you to keep you safe? Is there a talisman or a spiritual object, or do you want to have a big, strong baseball bat in your hand to, in case the monster pops out? so they can collect any objects that they need. And then I always just keep asking until I say, is that enough? Do you need anything else? Is there anything else? Do you feel perfectly safe and comfortable now and ready to bring these resources to look at the dream? And once they say yes, then we move to what's called the bridge. And in the Gaia method, the bridge is before we go inside the dream to poke around, which is the other part of the Gaia method, we peek in from the outside. And I ask the dreamer to notice, is there anything in the dream that you might have forgotten to share or you might have neglected to notice the first time that's actually a safety person or a safety object that's already there? And very often the dreamer will say, oh, yeah, now that you mention it, even though this was a nightmare, there was this climb up the tree and way up at the top there was kind of like a place where the branches came together and I could sit up there and be really safe from the monster because this monster couldn't climb trees. So we asked them to look at that. And then once all of these safe, protective people and objects and elements are there, then we do part two, which is the guided act of imagination, which is derived from Jungian psychology. And here we walk into the dream and re-dream it, basically. So we ask the person to bring in all the resources that they gathered from both outside and inside the dream and reconfigure the dream with the resources to confront the things that were dark and scary and ultimately to re-dream the dream so it has a different ending and a different resolution than the one that left them terrified. And then they can practice this new resolution. And that's a version of dream work called image rehearsal therapy, or IRT. And with practice of this new resolution of the nightmare, we actually can reprogram our brains and create new neural networks so that we can calm the fear and have dreams that are no longer waking us in the night with terror.
Oh, that's great. That is... absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to put everything in your book to good use, because from time to time I would have dreams of black, and I would be in a different time, like in Roman times, and I kept having a repeated dream of a woman handing me a gold necklace, and then I would say, no, I shouldn't have this. I don't deserve it. And I handed it back. And I had that dream a long time. And then finally I started doing the work on myself, spiritual work. And finally I stopped having that dream. And it's just amazing the spiritual aspect of it and the energy work that, you know, shifting your subconscious mind from lack to fulfillment.
What was so profound in your dream, and I don't know if you just completely stopped having it or if it transformed at all, but it sounded like in this other time and space in the dream setting back in Roman times, it sounded like someone was trying to give you a gift, but you were refusing it. Is that what was happening?
Yep, that's exactly what was happening. And it was just a recurring dream, and it just kept coming up. And, you know, to be healed, you know, that's another thing. When you keep repeating dreams, it's just something that intuitively is coming up for people to heal. Because I certainly found
And however you found your spiritual healing is so wonderful, because in what you just said is that you said, no, I don't deserve this. So somewhere along the line, you realized that you did deserve the gift and that you were a spiritual being and that you were connected with the divine and deserving of people gifting you with things. And that's probably why the dream started. Excuse me, why it stopped.
Yeah. It was fantastic to heal that, because, you know, after a while, you keep waking up from those dreams. It's like, you don't feel so good after that. But after I healed that, I started having dreams where I was being given rings and other things, and I accepted them. I said, thank you. Yes, I deserve it. And what a big shift that was.
Yeah, Oh, good for you. That's wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, what is meant by a dream having simultaneous multiple layers of meaning, and how do we find them?
Sure. So every dream has several layers of meaning to it, and dreams frequently, if not usually, come to us veiled in symbolism and metaphor. So in addition to the top layer of the dream, like you had this dream of you were back in Roman times, so there's the setting. A woman was trying to give you a gift of a gold necklace, and you were saying, no, I don't deserve this. So that's just like the top layer is the dream story itself. Once we start to go deeper, we look at associations to the images, the setting, the characters, the emotions in the dream. And we start with simple associations. Does this remind you of anything? Did this woman look familiar to you at all? And if so, who was she, or who did she remind you of? Or did you ever see a necklace like this anywhere? Did you ever own one like this? So we start asking questions. Have you ever been to Rome? Do you have ancestors who are Italian? You know, we start to peel back the layers to get to some of the associations. And then at an even deeper layer, we move out of the dream story itself to things that the dream might be pointing toward that didn't actually occur in the dream. So, for example, I don't know if you have Italian background or not, but if you were to say yes, then I'd say, oh, so tell me about your Italian ancestry, and when did your family come to America, and what was it like when they lived in Italy, you know, generations back? And we might find layers, you know, from generations in the past that are coming through in working with this dream. So that's the first three layers. And then the final layer is to think about, are there mystical, spiritual, transpersonal levels to the dream that we also can consider? Was this woman handing you the gift? Was she a spiritual being? Was she an aspect of a divinity or a saint, or some kind of a grandmother figure? So this is based, the method that I use to put together these layers is called the Pardes, and that's from the spiritual discipline of the Kabbalah, the mystical branch of Judaism. And we can use these ever-deepening layers of inquiry to get more and more information from our dreams. And it's not just either or. It can be both and. It can be this and that, not only this or that.
This is all fascinating to me because, you know, my dreams are very colorful. I remember them every night. I even keep a journal. It's very nice to keep a journal or, you know, just log everything down. And
Well, you clearly are not only a strong dreamer, but you've developed good dream hygiene, right?
Yeah.
So for anyone who wants to remember their dreams, I always say the best way, first of all, is to value them and think of them as important. And then after you value them and consider them important, get a journal, keep it by your bed, write it down as soon as you can after you wake, because dreams are like ephemeral. They're wisps of smoke. We get up, we walk around and start our day, and they're gone. So the best way to remember your dreams is absolutely to record them by yourself, by your bed.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's been true with me, like when you first wake up, not to move around a lot, because sometimes when I found I moved around a lot, it just, the dream, I would lose parts of the dream.
Right, right. There's what's called a body or a positional memory. So if that happens to you or to any of the listeners, what I advise people, sometimes what happens is you've had a dream and you didn't quite catch it, but you get up, you're in the shower, you're getting dressed. It's like, oh, my goodness, I had a dream. But you can't quite remember what it was. If you go back and lay down and put your body in the same position you were in when you were sleeping, like if you're a side sleeper and you curl up your knees, go lay down on the side you usually sleep on and curl your knees up. And chances are you will recapture large parts of the dream through this positional and body memory. So even if you've moved around, if you go back to stillness, often you can reclaim the dream space.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. Yeah, I would definitely do that from now on.
I have done that myself, you know, where I'm starting to get up and it's like, oh, it was a dream. And hopefully if I didn't have to jump up with an alarm, I lay back down and give myself a few minutes to gather. Another image that I like to use is to, like, if you pretend you're like wearing a shawl and then sort of wrap yourself in the dream. And if you kind of wrap the dream edges around you, that's another nice image or metaphor for recapturing a dream that might have eluded you.
Oh, yeah. It's been years in the making for me to learn all this. And I absolutely, you know, love that this book came out. And also you had another one, Modern Dream Work, New Tools for Decoding Your Soul's Wisdom. I haven't read that one yet, but I will. And
oh, great.
Yeah.
That one is a little more lighthearted. That one I actually wrote first. And that one is not about nightmares per se. There's one chapter that talks about nightmares and the Gaia Method, but the Modern Dream Work actually has the concept of our dreams bringing us home to our true self, and it follows the storyline and theme of The Wizard of Oz with Dorothy's quest to find her way home. So we do that through dream work in the first book in Modern Dream Work.
Oh, nice. That makes it easier. And There's a question here that I have attached, a, you know, kind of like a personal experience that I had. But first I'll ask the question of, what do family legacy burdens or epigenetic ancestral dreams mean?
So did you want to attach something to that question, or do you want me to answer the question first?
Oh, you can answer that first, then I'll I'll mention my experience afterwards.
Okay. So family legacy burdens is a phrase used in IFS, Internal Family Systems, which is a psychotherapeutic method of working. And basically that and epigenetics both mean that we can inherit things that we didn't actually live through. And there's a little bit of a difference between inheriting blue eyes or red hair or a certain height than inheriting traumas or gifts or things that have occurred to our family members in the past. So we're not literally inheriting in our genes per se, but what happens in our environment affects us and then affects how we lay down neural networks in our brains, and then affects how our genes respond to that. It's called, it'll come back to me, the fancy word for it. But what it means is you may have, or anybody else, have had a family history that has been passed down from generation to generation. So, for example, if you had a family history in Ireland and they lived through the Irish potato famine and they were starving and they came to America and they were very, very, you know, cautious and saved food and never wasted a drop, and these were your great-grandparents, well, they brought up your grandparents with food is scarce, be careful, don't waste a drop. Your grandparents learned that even though they didn't live through the famine. And then the grandparents passed it down to your parents, and they picked up the same message. And then that got passed down to the next generation. Somewhere along the line, people picked up this message that you should hoard your food, or you should be careful always to stockpile your food, or you shouldn't eat too much, which can be the source of some eating disorders. So even though the current person didn't live through some of the earlier traumas, whether it was someone who was in a pogrom or in a war zone or lived through terrible natural disasters or were displaced with immigration, even if that wasn't their experience, they could be feeling the effects of their ancestors' experience.
Oh, yes. And it's pretty amazing because, you know, I had a dream of it started out where I walked past my family members, mostly deceased, but some that were alive, and they were cheering me on, and there was like this enclave that I was walking to, and then I had a book in my hand. It was, I guess it was like a book of life, and then I was
a book of what kind?
It kind of like a book of life. What do they call that?
Oh, a book of life.
Yeah, like an Akashic record.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And you know, I was just walking past them, and I'm waving at them like I see them every day, and well, at least the deceased ones. And I was walking straight down, and then I got a glimpse of the Egyptian goddess Maat, and I remember throwing the book in the enclave, and I'd seen like this beautiful vase with a huge ostrich feather sticking out. And then all of a sudden, I seen like this lightning bolt come in and then disintegrate the book. Like it just went poof.
Huh.
You know, kind of like a genie witch. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I healed something. I'm hoping.
And that was the dream?
Yeah.
Is that where you woke up?
Yeah. After a lot of...
Do you have any thoughts or ideas or associations as to what it's about? Because there's a lot of different aspects to this dream.
I truly believe that, you know, even though most of my family's from Italy and from, you know.
Oh, they are.
England.
Interesting. Okay. And I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you mentioned Italy before, like, it's like a little spark in me.
Because you had the Roman woman there. You were said in Roman times, that's where it came from. So there you go.
Yeah. That just put a little light bulb above my head. I was like, oh, there's a clue. And,
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe many, many generations ago, I might have been Egyptian because I definitely was obsessed with Egypt and everything when I was growing up, and also Roman.
Uh-huh.
And they're both closely tied together, so I guess they would be, but you know, just having that dream, it just kind of made me feel like, okay, well, maybe I healed something down the family line. I was hoping that would be the case, so, but I woke up feeling good about it.
Well, that's the secret sauce right there. How you felt in the dream and how you felt when you woke up, positive, negative, or neutral. And if you woke up feeling good, then your hypothesis, I'm sure, is most likely correct, that something was healed, because you woke up feeling positive, this Akashic record, this book of life, that something needed to get stopped, apparently. And when you were in contact with the Egyptian goddess and you threw it into the enclave and it got zapped, something was done then, right? Something was done.
Oh, yeah. It might have been something that was negative that was passed on in the family, that maybe somehow I healed. I still have yet to figure out what that is. I have a few ideas in my head, but that was interesting.
Yeah. What's so beautiful and wonderful about sort of the spiritual and mystical aspect of dream work and nightmare work is that in our dreams, it's always now. There's no past or future in dreams. It's always now. So what that means is it's all sacred time. So in our dream life, we can go forwards and backwards in time. And if there's healing that needs to happen from the past and bring on to the future, we can do that in the sacred space of the dream.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's been dreams where I was flying and I knew I was in a dream and I kind of manipulated the dream. I only had like one or two dreams like that where I knew I was in a dream and I could manipulate it. So that was pretty cool.
Right. So that's lucid dreaming. So you had a couple of lucid dreams. It means exactly that. You're aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming. And that's another skill that can be developed that can also be used as a tool for healing or just for having fun, like flying around.
Yeah, I would like to explore that with you because, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a big dreamer and, you know, in more ways than one. But but it's just so important. The dream work has been so healing to me. And when I seen your book, I was like, wow, I'm like, I really, and being that I have PTSD and my husband has PTSD, you know, mine is explosive PTSD where my husband has war-related PTSD, combat-related.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he's still in healing mode, but I've known a family, like you mentioned that girl before, that had grown up in a family of alcoholics. I knew a family of alcoholics, and I thought to myself, wow, I'm like, I wonder if that was genetic or, you know, a karmic thing that they had to go through. You know, three of them have passed on, and it was just, you know, one more recently by suicide. And I thought to myself,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It was rough because, you know, I was working with her about positive thinking and breaking old patterns, and then that happened. And, you know, it's just, it's a shame. But, you know, I believe that people, if they want to heal, they can do it through dream work and other, you know, modalities as well. You know, you just have to really, and I think a lot of people out there are afraid to because of what they'll uncover. And I know that's scary because I've done it myself.
Right. Which goes back to why we need to do deep healing work if people have had either no or think that they've had trauma. Work with a professional. Work with someone who's trained in trauma treatment. Don't try to do it yourself. Create community around you of people who are safe, supportive, life-affirming people, because that's going to make a difference. As well, and not to try to do it alone. And what's also really important is for people not to feel that they're somehow at fault or wrong if they're not healing, quote unquote, fast enough, because there's no timetable that's the same for every person. Everyone has a different timetable. That's, you know, we can only do what we can do with the resources we have at the moment. So to know that we're doing the best we can is a really important message to have for ourselves and for others.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the toughest step is admitting that you have a problem, at least in my case, and it was kind of a bitter pill to take. But, you know, once you love and accept yourself, no matter where you're at, you know, that's very important too. You know, just everything in the past has led you to this moment. And I want everybody out there to hear, you know, that, you know, it's okay not to be okay, but but eventually we're going to have to do the work, and we're going to have to be brave enough to do it. And once we do, it's like it's like having a key and unlocking a new part of us that's, you know, been wanting to come out.
Often our dreams and our nightmares are the SOS saying, you really need to do this. We're not going to let you rest peacefully until you attend to this. So we need to be compassionate with ourselves and also listen up to the messages we're getting from our unconscious.
Oh, absolutely. And the subconscious mind is the record. It's kind of like a video camera, and it records everything. And also it's a record keeper of all hurts. So, of course, it's going to bring it up over and over and over again. Speaking of over and over again, okay, here's another dream I had. It might have been possibly from past life. It's the crashing dream, and I was in a World War II plane, and it looked like the German cross, like a red cross on the side of the plane, and the dream was always black and white, and I just about hit the ground, just when I was about to hit the concrete, I woke up, but I was jolted up. Like I felt my energy body go back into my physical body. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And that was traumatizing, waking up from that. So, you know, I had that dream like most of my life, and finally it went away. I don't know what I did really to do that. I mean, I've been working on myself for about a good 15, 16 years now, and you know, little by little, you know, I should say more than little by little, a lot of stuff fell to the wayside that was negative. So, you know, the spiritual work involved with all this is really very healing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you clearly are doing something that works for you. If you struggled with repetitive nightmares for years and years and you no longer are, that, you know, the proof is in the pudding, right? It's
you're
doing something right. It's helping you to heal.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had become a Reiki master, and that's a whole other story. But but I did a lot of energy work on myself, chakra clearing and all that. And, you know, it's just amazing, the mind, body, and spirit all working in conjunction together. And that's what you specialize in, which I think is so amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, you cut off. I didn't hear you.
That's okay. Oh, go ahead.
So I was just going to affirm what you said, that, you know, we are unified beings, and we are not split into separate bodies or minds or spirits. We're all one unit. You know, we are a body, mind, and a spirit, and the spirit is in us, and the energy is around us. And we can't separate one from the other, Western medicine and Western science tries to do. You know, even Einstein was a great mystic. He didn't make a separation between the spiritual and the scientific. And I studied Reiki as well, and I, you know, work with other forms of energy work on chakras and meridians. And I'm a great believer in Western medicine, and I'm a great believer in alternative forms of treatment as well, and integrating them all.
Yes, but that's the best way to do it. You have the best of both worlds, and they just come together, and it's just amazing when they do. How much healing can be done, and you know, I have to, you know, like we were just saying, the role of spirituality in resolving nightmares from traumas is huge. And what practical steps can the dreamer and the professional who is helping the dreamer do to resolve nightmares?
Well, if we're looking at the spiritual aspect of resolving nightmares, to be able to hold a belief system that allows you to know that you are not alone, that you are safe and protected, is a really, really big step toward healing and resolution. And sometimes people grew up with a spiritual or a religious background, and sometimes they didn't. Sometimes the spiritual or religious background was very positive, and sometimes it was not, and things done in the name of religion have been horrific over the centuries. So it doesn't matter what we call it, right? I sometimes joke and I say, you know, I ask people, are you comfortable with the G word, right? Can we use the word God, or you prefer a different word? It could be God, it could be the force, it could be the universe, it could be spirit, it could be nature, whatever it is, to help someone to connect with that which is larger than ourselves, that sort of benign healing presence that's available is a wonderful tool, if you will, but it's only, you know, a part of our total healing. And actually, in the last chapter of the book, I think I titled it, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's From PTSD to PTSG, which is from post-traumatic stress disorder to post-trauma spiritual growth. And that's the direction we want to point ourselves in, is toward the spiritual growth.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been huge. I cannot say it, spirituality definitely plays a part, along with traditional psychology and just integrating everything. It's just been nothing short of amazing. And your book is absolutely amazing, you know, and I just love it. And I want to read your other book too, and do a show with you about that too.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, speaking about another dream I had, okay, here we go. I kept having to talk about repetitive dreams. Another one I had was about me being in a white, almost like a choir gown or a religious gown, and then being in the water, and then somebody coming up behind me and just killed me from behind. They stabbed me. And that was terrifying. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, maybe that's another lifetime where, you know, you know, I you were talking about religious dogma before, you know, maybe it was something spiritual I did in a past life that wasn't approved of, you know, and so they, you know, my take on it was that, you know, I did something that I wasn't supposed to do, and I suppressed a lot of my energy work and things like that because of it.
Interesting. So do you still have this dream, or has that stopped as well?
That stopped as well. You know, I first started my spiritual journey, that's, you know, it just kept coming up. And then I spoke with another person in a metaphysical class that I had, and she said, oh my gosh, I had the same dream too. Now, how about that? How about when there's more than one person that has the same dream?
That's really interesting. So I'll respond to different parts. I'll respond to the last little piece first and then go back into your dream. Sometimes we can dream each other's dreams. We can dream for each other.
Yeah.
We can share dreams, particularly when you're in a setting where you're doing deep work. Like when I run dream circles, and not infrequently on any given week that we meet, members will have dreams with similar themes to them. And it's sometimes uncanny how similar the theme might be, even if it's not the exact dream. So there's some loosening of the boundaries that, you know, can exist as our spirits can intermingle, or our energies can intermingle. But I'll tell you, you're a minister. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. I'm a minister. I'm a spiritualist minister. I give readings, and a lot of times,
okay,
you know, I do the energy work on people, and sometimes I kind of pick up, even though I protect myself, sometimes it's still kind of, you know, I still take on other people's stuff too.
Right. So here's a couple of things then about that dream you had. One is, I don't know if you have a ritual that you use or a practice that you use to clean yourself off after you do energy work with people, but particularly if there were very powerful forces that you were working with people, to have a real routine, not only of keeping yourself boundaried, but of washing it away afterwards. And I'm thinking about that because as I listen to your dream, in the dream work world, I'm a member of an organization called IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And among other things, we learn that we don't ever tell someone what their dream means, because the ultimate authority of what a dream means is with the dreamer, him or herself. But we can say, if it were my dream, I'd wonder about, or if it were my dream, I'd think it might be, to offer our reflections. So as I listen to you tell your dream, and you talked about wearing these white robes and being in the water, the first thing I thought of was you were having some kind of a baptism experience in the water with those robes. But then you said someone came up and killed you. So
yeah, from behind.
My association was many possible associations, but one is resurrection. So if we were looking at from a Christian point of view, you know, Jesus died, he was killed, and then came back again. And in your dream, I don't know if you came back again, but you're in the water, seemingly having a cleansing baptism, and in Jewish tradition, going into the water and going underwater through a mikvah is the same kind of a cleansing experience. But if the killing in this dream would be synonymous or equivalent to what in shamanic tradition we call dismemberment. And in shamanic tradition, when you're killed in a dream, it's for the purpose of coming back whole, to reconsolidate yourself to a new wholeness. And so I just wonder about that. If it were my dream, I'd be thinking along those lines.
Wow, yeah. Wow, that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, because I was wondering, is this a past life thing, or is this metaphoric, you know? And why did I have
the
same dream?
It could be all of the above, right? Yeah, and that.
Yeah. Now, here's another dream real quick. It's I was in an astrology class about 6 years ago. Me, the instructor, and somebody else in the astrology class had a dream of a huge tidal wave in Chile. And we all felt, you know, we could actually feel the ground shaking underneath us and the water bubbling up and going way out into sea. And then seeing this huge wave with like a little bit of a curl on it, but it was split. It was weird, but it was, I just thought it was fascinating that the three of us had the same dream. I mean, as far as I knew, there wasn't, you know, any tidal wave in Chile, but, you know, it's very strange.
So what you just said is a really good first step in dreams. First, to look at what we would call the manifest or the overt content. Let's check, did this happen? Could this have happened? Is it happening, right? Is it real, in other words? Are you dreaming something, or was it a precognitive dream? But if Chile didn't have a tidal wave, so it wasn't precognitive and it wasn't happening, then the next layer is, what's it a symbol or metaphor of? And I wonder about what was going on in Chile at the time that you had this dream. Was there a lot of upheaval? Was there a tidal wave in the government takeovers or turnovers? And what would be the connection that you and the other members of your class would have with Chile or South America or Spanish-speaking people? Or, you know, I'd look for where the common metaphor was and see what was going on at that time.
Yeah. I'll check into that. It's definitely a lot of interesting, you know, how you do the layers. That's a good way
an onion, right? You could just peel. We peel one layer and we see another one underneath. We peel one layer and there's another one underneath.
Oh, that's so interesting. This is so cool. I'm glad we're talking tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And this is another question I flagged. When should you consult with a professional about your nightmares?
Right, that's important. When it is interfering with your health and well-being, when you are having really disrupted sleep, when you're having physical symptoms that are following the nightmares, when you can't shake it and it's like a hangover all, you know, the next day, or when you know that you've had trauma in your past or suspect you've had trauma in your past, consult with a professional, because you know, as we pointed out in the dream that you had about the necklace, you do deserve it. You do deserve the healing. You do deserve the healing. So don't hesitate to consult with a professional if the dreams are overwhelming you, or if you suspect or know that you've had traumatic experiences that have not really completely left you yet.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, a lot of times when I was growing up, you know, I would have dreams of poverty. Like, I'd see myself like as a different gender, and seeing myself as a boy with rags and I was skin and bones, and then seeing myself as a man who, you know, was well fed and, you know, successful. Different scenarios. You know, back then I was still in lack mode, and, you know, that was before I healed that. And I would have constant dreams about poverty and not being deserving and things like that. So, yeah.
Right. So you already understand what that was about, because the dreams came to show you what your belief systems were telling you.
Yeah. And once you work, you know, to anybody listening out there, if you're constantly worrying about money, if you're constantly thinking about lack, you know, it's probably very deep in your subconscious somehow, somewhere. And this can be healed, because, you know, I'm kind of living proof of that. You know, not that I'm a mega millionaire or anything, but I'm a lot better now than I was when I was younger. So, I mean, I'm still a work in progress, but, you know, hey, you know, it's just been an amazing therapy with, you know, with the dream work and working with the subconscious. It just literally blew my mind.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way. And I have to ask also, what are the pluses or misuses of using lucid dreaming with nightmares?
Oh, right. So we talked before about when something has happened to us, when we've had upsetting, traumatic experiences, we need to be able to, as Alan Siegel says, name it to tame it. We need to acknowledge it and do the healing work to get past it. So in lucid dreaming, there's a tendency to want to run away from the bad or scary things, or just take off and fly, or jump on that cruise ship, or do whatever it is that's fun. But if we only do that and don't ever face the monster will keep chasing us. So in lucid dreaming, to make sure that, you know, not that it's a negative to do it, but once you're safe in a safe place in your lucid dreaming, to not ignore that there's something that still needs to be dealt with in some way, not only escaped from, but somehow transformed. Because there's a difference between escaping for now, something that comes back again later, and truly doing the work of transformation, where that monster is transformed into a guardian or a friend.
Yeah, it's, now I know you spoke about somatic, somatic or body-oriented approach. Why is that so important for full healing from trauma and from nightmares?
Well, because we live inside of our bodies, and things that happen to us happen to our bodies as well as our feelings and our hearts and our minds, and they're not separate. So we may have physical symptoms, we may have ailments, we may have somatic responses, and when we can attend to what's going on in our physical body as well as what's going on in our minds and our hearts, then we're doing unified healing. So to really be noticing when we're doing the dream work, not only what are the emotions we have, what does it make us think about, but what does it feel like in our bodies when we have that scary dream, when we have the dread, when we have the anger? Where do we feel it? Do we feel the anger as we in our jaw, as we grit our teeth? Do we feel the fear as a lump in our throat or a pit in our stomach? And to tune in to bringing the healing. And there's lots of different somatic modalities, one the oldest of which, sort of the granddaddy of somatic modalities, is focusing by Eugene Gendron. But there are many others as well that are very powerful ways to integrate the body into the healing work.
Yeah. It's this work is amazing. And I'm just so thankful, you know, like I mentioned before, that we're talking about all this, because there's a lot of stuff that you answered tonight for me that I've been wondering about for years. I mean, even though I've healed some things, there's,
right,
you know, I had questions about it. And
I'm so glad. So if people are interested, and I know because we'll probably, you know, need to be wrapping up pretty soon, you know, they can find both of the books online and through the publishers, Llewellyn. And each of the two books has its own website, www.ppsdreams, and then www.moderndreamworkbooks.com. And you can read about the books and decide if they're for you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, I was going to mention also, check out Linda's website too, or her other website, lindayaleschiller.com. And, you know, I just cannot thank you enough for being on here tonight. And I really enjoyed our talk, and, you know, I want to have you back again. I got to read your first book.
Okay. So if you read that one, call me up and we'll have another chat. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a wonderful night.
You too. Take good care. Thank you for having me on the show. Bye, Sue.
Bye-bye. Bye, Linda. Wow, that was amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm going to take everybody out with the full version of Dreamweaver by Gary Wright. And what could I say? Sweet dreams. And absolutely check out Linda's websites. And she's as you can hear, she's a very knowledgeable and wonderful person. So have a good night, everybody, and enjoy Dreamweaver by Gary Wright. Sweet dreams, everyone.